Hey guys, thank you for joining us today and welcome to the Cruelty of the Gods, Warriors, Heroes, and Mental Afflictions. My name is Kat and I'm currently studying film and religion at Birmingham Southern College. Today we'll be discussing Euripides' Heracles. Our main point of analysis in today's podcast is the episodic evidence of PTSD displayed in Heracles. I'm also joined by Cheyenne and Ellie. Just real quick, guys, can you go ahead and introduce yourselves?
Hello, I am Cheyenne. I'm an English major and gender and women's studies minor at Birmingham Southern College. With my experiences in literary theory, Euripides' text initially interested me because of its allegorical properties. And I'm really excited to discuss with you guys today the meaning of the madness of Heracles.
Hey guys, I'm Ellie and I'm currently studying classics and I have a particular passion for Greek literature and its depiction of gender. This is highly relevant to Euripides' Heracles, as Heracles' masculinity, or rather the fragility of it, is a large part of what makes the link between him and mental illness worth talking about today. To me, this is because of the modern day stigma that I feel is attached, specifically to male mental illness.
And I'll go ahead and say, we will be discussing toxic masculinity today, and we're going to be discussing the fragility or just the overall feeling that Heracles had and why toxic masculinity relates to his situation. We're going to discuss the interpretations of mental illness in Heracles today and its connection to what we deem as mental illness now. So kind of the modernity and archaic side of it, and we're going to parallel the two. What most interested me about this piece was my own personal knowledge regarding mental illness. This is especially relevant considering that May is Mental Health Awareness Month. So my colleague Ellie is briefly going to sum up the basis of Heracles with some more information about its playwright Euripides.
Okay, so the tale of Hercules is most popularly known through the Disney version of Hercules. In the musical, Hercules chooses Megara or Megara over his own life, and the two live happily ever after. However, the Athenian playwright Euripides' original text is a much darker story. Heracles returns to his hometown of Thebes after completing the 12 arduous labors that have been set forth by Hera. But Thebes has been taken over by a man called Lycus, who plans to kill Heracles' children to ensure that his usurped rule cannot be reusurped later. Heracles returns to Thebes and kills Lycus, but then he hunts down and murders his wife and three children in a fit of madness, a madness that's apparent even before the gods intervene and amplify it. Heracles then strongly contemplates suicide in response to his actions. I can't imagine that the Disney movie would have been quite so popular if Disney had decided to stick to the original tale. Euripides himself produced over 90 plays in his lifetime, and he was known for posing unsettling and thought-provoking questions that have made the audience that used to make the audience very uncomfortable. There is certainly a theme. This is certainly a theme that comes up in Heracles' play that we're focusing on today. So, guys, what are your thoughts about the portrayal of Heracles' madness?
There's a really interesting contrast between how we portray heroic acts today and how they portrayed it back in antiquity. So most contemporary stories, literature, movies often celebrate the heroic roles that soldiers complete while abroad. However, the ancient Greeks wrote tragedies that focused on the effects that harsh labors had on soldiers' health. The ancient soldiers often fell into fits of rage or hallucinations, which we would now consider to be shell shock or battle fatigue, which is a subset of post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD, but specifically about the effects on soldiers. Despite all of this, the ancient Greeks viewed mental illness as an affliction from the gods and goddesses. These gods would drive soldiers insane for a variety of reasons, and in this case, that Hera hated Heracles for being the son of Zeus and another woman. Despite the fickleness of the gods, ancient Greeks did not see this as a personal problem, though. They used gods to say that mental illness was not the fault of the soldier, but something beyond control that was not them. And this is a really interesting contrast from the stories we see today and how we conceptualize mental illness today.
Honestly, I didn't even think about Heracles having a different origin story. I didn't know Heracles and Hercules were the same thing. Before reading it, I never even thought to analyze any ancient text for instances involving mental illness. Also, going off of what Cheyenne said about gods being involved with your madness, Lysa says in Heracles, the killer himself will not know that he has killed his own sons until I've released him from my madness. Lysa using the word my is a great example of just how much the gods controlled. Much like the other Disney-fied stories, like the Grimm fairy tales, An ancient Grecian warclad Heracles is not the least bit kid friendly. So, Ellie, I remember you mentioned that Heracles' madness or aggressive behavior would have started becoming apparent even before Hera set the curse of madness upon him, because it was his fate.
Fate is a absolutely massive aspect of the ancient world. Do mortals even have any say in what they do, or are the gods responsible for absolutely everything? I find it particularly interesting that Euripides actually plays up to this idea, but he also dispels it in another way. Whilst the gods do indeed send Heracles mad, Lyssa is actually sent to do this on the orders of Hera. However, when she arrives, Heracles is already foaming at the mouth. His madness is already present. Lyssa just amplifies it.
Yeah, and adding on to that, Ellie, Lyssa also says, "Soon I will have you dancing an even wilder dance." And this further implicates that Heracles had already had madness within him, but that Lyssa would push it beyond a threshold that he could control. In case anyone is really having a hard time understanding this idea of free will versus fate and how this all plays with the gods, another way to look at this is in other ancient texts, Aphrodite would often entice lust or love within people, but these are emotions that already exist in the people themselves before she was even present. In this case, it's just that Lyssa is enticing madness inside of Heracles, even though it was already there.
Yeah, and I think a good example of that is the Roman version of Aphrodite. Venus makes Dido fall even more madly in love with Aeneas. She already has feelings for him, but Venus just really amplifies this, which is exactly what Lyssa did, like Cheyenne said. In fact, saying even wilder dance really highlights that she's just making it even more madness. And also, when Heracles is sent to sleep by the gods after this episode of induced madness, his father and some other men tie him to a pillar. Personally, this reminded me of the idea of a straitjacket or something used to stop someone with a severe mental illness from hurting themselves or other people.
Yeah, I can see that. I can even see like the cream suit, like the pants and like the collar and stuff that they put with the straitjacket that a lot of people in mental institutions used to wear or even wear now. Also, when Heracles is running rampant and telling his father who all will die by his hand, Euripides writes, "Then in his mind he headed off to a chariot that didn't exist, sat on a seat that didn't exist, and struck at the horses with a whip that didn't exist. Each mention of didn't exist has me imagining someone with severe schizophrenia." People diagnosed with schizophrenia in modern day have very rare circumstances of seeing more than one person, place, or thing at a time. Obviously, it does happen, but it is rare. So Euripides might not have meant to portray what we now, you know, see this as his mental illness, but Heracles as a whole is a very good example of the dangers toxic masculinity can have on men's minds.
And going into that as well, so while Euripides may not have meant to portray mental illness, he definitely did make it a point to say that none of this existed, and it was all within Heracles' mind. And, you know, going into this idea of schizophrenia, a big part of Heracles' episode is that he's seeing, like, these grand hallucinations that really fuel his murder spree. The reason that he actually kills his sons and Megara to begin with is the fact that he imagines them as the son and wife of Lycus.
Yeah, a very common symptom of PTSD is suicidal thoughts or actions. So Heracles, after this episode, you know, he feels grief. Now this grief might not be regret for murdering his family, but instead he might have felt a loss of honor. Men in archaic times, especially in a lot of plays, were said to want to commit suicide or committed suicide because they had lost their feeling of honor or something embarrassing had happened due to them doing something cowardly. Like, I know something like that happened in the Odyssey. I don't know what I'm thinking of, though.
You know something cowardly?
Something cowardly, like in the Odyssey.
The only thing I can think of is some of the suitors acting cowardly towards Penelope, or Odysseus himself spending time crying on the shores of Aegea after Calypso keeps him there.
It's like whenever they show emotion, there is some diction or language that they say that might be deemed as like suicidal in a way, if that makes sense. That's at least how I saw it. But see, women, they would have committed suicide. Antigone?
Yep, she commits suicide.
Yeah, because of, you know, something that they had seen as, you know, an honorable end or something shameful had happened to them. So like premarital pregnancy or something that like society would not accept, or even something that they saw as an honorable end.
You know, this really sounds that like toxic masculinity plays a really big role in Annus and Heracles. Many of Euripides' plays and other Greek tragedies of this time focus on honor and then death resulting from a lack of honor. It seems like the societal structure of ancient Greece primed its citizens to be victims of suicide.
It seemed as if, and obviously, ancient countries were patriarchy, and they had very high expectations for the men in those countries. But it seemed like it was a real part of Grecian and Roman culture to kind of feed masculinity and have it be a really, really big deal. When it came to the mere belief of Heracles' wife and kids being cared for by another man, that is like the ultimate stab to his pride. Like Heracles is the man, that is his family and no one else's. And at this time, you know, women would have rather killed themselves and be shamed by something that a man had done to them. And men would rather die honorably than live honorless. So just as men who suffer from mental illness today are treated, Heracles' actions had to be due to something being done that wasn't his control, not because of his own private suffering.
You know, this whole discussion has me curious. So while authorial intent is something that's kind of risky to consider, since texts can have multiple meanings due to reader response theory, it seems like this could potentially reflect the life of Euripides or the events going on around him. He also seemed to write a lot of plays about women, which were also tragedies and featured women in these very aggressive roles. So with our knowledge of the ancient world is limited, what do you guys think about this play as a reflection of ancient Greece or Euripides?
Well, Euripides, he was born around 480 BCE, and his birth is said to have coincided exactly with the naval battle of Salamis that took place between the ancient, the allied Greek states and the Persian Empire. As a result of this, it is certainly possible to at least suggest that a very young Euripides may have seen the effects of the war on man. And this is something seen even further because as a grown man, he experienced and lived through the Peloponnesian Wars, which is something that the majority of eligible Athenian men were expected to fight in. Moreover, I've read that Euripides may not have been very popular in his time with regard to his writing, because his characterization of women, as Cheyenne said, was very masculine. An example here is Medea, who is characterized as almost a man in the way that she kills and responds to her children and family. And also with his developed ideas about what we deem as mental illness, like Heracles and even Ajax. They may have been far too developed for his time, and so the audience watching may not have been as interested or may not have understood. In fact, did you know that he never even won any tragedy competitions? Sophocles and Aeschylus were far more popular and they beat him every time.
There were competitions?
Yeah, there used to be competitions in ancient Athens for tragedies, for comedies, and they were a big deal. People that won them, it was good to win them. And
I don't know why I thought that we just did that posthumously just because it was popular.
Yeah, no, they were... Sophocles and Aeschylus especially were very popular in their time.
Was Sophocles the guy that wrote Ajax, correct?
Yes.
That makes me really curious to see as to why Sophocles was able to win more awards than Euripides, even though they both portrayed soldiers who had essentially PTSD.
Yeah. Sophocles we see a lot more in every aspect of philosophy, classics, psychology,
exactly.
Like all sorts of things. So obviously he was much more spread around then. Thus, we know more about him now than Euripides. I hadn't heard of Euripides until learning about all of this.
Yeah.
So.
Apparently, Euripides was even torn apart by women. That's
what?
How he died. That's one rumor, that he was killed by being torn apart by women.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I suppose you could link that to his characterization of them. Also, just going back to how he wasn't necessarily very popular, Heracles, the play, was actually one of the alphabet plays. And the alphabet plays were known as being a lot less popular and well-known than all the other types of tragedy in Athens, just as a side note.
Yeah. Wow. You know that.
Yeah.
So, all in all, today we just really wanted to, again, parallel how we view mental illness today versus how it was treated or discussed in ancient texts without having, like, obviously a definition for it then. There is still a huge stigma around it today, obviously. Which is shocking when you consider that this was a topic addressed, you know, 1,500 or so years ago. So we knew it was the perfect time to discuss this during Mental Health Awareness Month. Something that has been observed by the National Alliance for Mental Illness in the United States since 1949. Their purpose is to raise awareness for the 18% of Americans that suffer from depression, schizophrenia, and or bipolar disorder. And I'm not going to lie, when I saw that this was observed since, you know, after World War II, I was like, seriously? I thought I expected to say like the 80s or the 90s. Because it just seems like, you know, it's been 50 plus years. Why isn't acceptance a little better? Because now that so many people have suffered from something for so long, people are kind of finally waking up. But it seems like, obviously, we're a little bit lacking in the awareness. But so I think the most frustrating thing is that for decades, men and women, they were institutionalized. They were tested because they admitted to having symptoms that we thankfully now, you know, diagnose and medicate normally, but you know, just the tragedy of that overall is sad.
Yeah, I had no idea about that. Obviously, coming from an English perspective, I'm not too familiar with how Americans treat and react to mental health. My personal knowledge of PTSD and shell shock by extension and its history of it comes almost solely from World War I. And the effect that it had on men who experienced trench warfare and the horrific conditions that came with it. I remember learning that the symptoms of shell shock range from uncontrollable diarrhea, unrelenting anxiety, hysterical tics of the facial muscles, stomach cramps, blindness, nightmares. However, all of these symptoms were dependent on actually what the soldier experienced in the war. Say, if he had shot a man in the face, he may have experienced facial tics almost out of guilt. And if he, say, was a sniper, he may have experienced blindness. I find this particularly interesting because although Heracles shows signs of PTSD and even shell shock to a certain extent in the play itself, he hadn't got PTSD from a war. Rather, he got it from the 12 incredibly difficult tasks that he experienced. Still, his symptoms have certain similarities that I couldn't help but notice.
And that's what really matters about this interpretation of the madness of Heracles by Euripides. Because Heracles, despite not necessarily being a soldier, but having all these incredible tasks, he still did show signs for PTSD. And this allows our reader to understand how mental illness was conceptualized back in antiquity and our evolution of the understanding of mental health today. Antiquity used gods to explain mental illness and irrational behaviors, and that was very progressive of them to say that it was not something of a person, but of everything else. However, the structure of society that led people to suicide and then the fact that they let mental illness carry on for so long without any sort of reformation is a criticism against antiquity, and that's something that I think we've at least moved past somewhat today.
Yeah,
I agree.
Well, thank you guys for listening, and we will hopefully be back soon.
Bye.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.